Okay, this afternoon we're going to have our update on our state of confession.
Let's begin with the prayer.
Heavenly Father, we ask that you would bless this presentation as well as this discussion so that the truth of your word might have its way not only with us but also with our beloved Senate. We ask it all in Jesus' name.
Amen.
Before you, we got a pile of paper, and I had them stapled into two sections so that you could put them side by side. One section simply has a timeline. The other section is some documentation, and hopefully I've got them in the right order so that whenever I make reference to them, I'll say, it's in your sheet, and then you can take a look at it. So if you can set them side by side. I'm not exactly sure what was the best way to go about this update. What I ended up deciding to do was to use a timeline and to go back. My goal today is to really take you from our state of confession up to the present, tell you what's been going on, how it's been working, and then after that, show you kind of the path in the future, what are some dates that are coming up. In order to do this, though, and after we get done, after about an hour presentation, I'd like to have some question and answer and discussion. However, if anywhere along the way you want some clarification or something doesn't quite make sense, let me know. Ask me a question, or if you'd like to add a short comment about something. Many of the things that I will go over are things that I have talked about either in a Bible study or in an elders meeting or in personal discussions. If you're not a part of one of those groups or haven't been there, some of this stuff is going to be new. I'll guarantee if you haven't, it's going to be information overload. So that's why I included these sheets, so that at least you'd have somewhere to scratch some notes down if it was brand new. In order to do this, I did want to back up just a little bit and go back to March 23rd, 2001. And I'm going to run through these first two sheets rather quickly and then slow down after our state of confession. Now, first of all, in your second pack of information, there are the first two sheets. One's called The Crisis in the LCMS, a resource guide. The next sheet is called Come Let Us Return to the Lord. Here they are. These two documents, if you haven't seen these two documents, these are ones. This one, Come Let Us Return to the Lord, is a summary of what had gone on with Wallace Schultz and his adjudication of Dr. David Behnke and then how that was thrown out. Crisis in the LCMS, and that's where I took most of the information in the timeline leading up to the state of confession. There is a long timeline in here from 2001 to 2004. So if there's any kind of questions about that, that's where you can find those. All right, March 23rd, 2001, our synodical president, A.L. Berry, dies less than 4 months into the LCMS convention. And so there's a lot of scrambling to find candidates. Who ends up being elected is Gerald Kieschnick. He's elected at the July 2001 LCMS convention with 50.8% of the vote. In addition to this, I might mention already at the beginning, and what I hopefully do as I go through these points is be able to comment upon each one of them. Some of them are simply representative of other things that are going on. Some are interesting dates. This, for example, Dr. Berry had prepared a response to a group called Renewal in Missouri, which was a group of charismatic Lutherans. If I remember, as I go through this, I think they have been around for like 18 years now without being disciplined and taken care of. He was ready to present a report to the 2001 convention. With his passing, that report never saw the light of day, and it was never dealt with. Now keep this in mind, because we'll be coming back to that a little bit later. So at the LCMS convention, Gerald Kieschnick was elected. Not too many months later, September 19th, President Kieschnick and Dr. Behnke participate in some joint unionistic services with the ELCA following the September 11th. Then September 20th, Dr. Behnke gets permission from Smile for President Kishnick to participate in the Yankee Stadium. He does do that on September 23rd. Already by November 9th, charges are filed against both Kishnick and Behnke. However, the charges against President Kishnick are never dealt with simply because the CCM ruled in December 9th of 2001 that only a synodical convention could discipline the synodical president. Now, you're going to need to keep some acronyms straight. Your next sheet over here talks about the Committee on Theology and Church Relations. I will refer to that committee as the CTCR, Committee on Theology and Church Relations. This is a group of pastors and laymen that are somewhat of a commission that puts out study documents. And they're asked to study something, and then they put out a study document. It is not official, that is, it's not Missouri Senate approved, until the convention accepts it. So it's often considered, and the word is a study document. In other words, this isn't the official position, it's just to be studied. And so this is what the CTCR does. The back of that next page, I have something called the CCM. This is called the Commission on Constitutional Matters. This commission is a group of people that are appointed by the synodical president, and their job is to look at the Constitution and bylaws of the Senate and to make rulings stating, here's what the Constitution and bylaws really mean. When someone asks, well, what does this mean? They will make decisions in that way. So one kind of deals with the political Constitution and bylaws. The other one gives study documents based on theology. So the CCM, the Constitutional Commission, said the synodical president couldn't be disciplined. That has never been dealt with. Because that happened, there were several, and I'm going to show you where there were several districts in convention that asked that this be addressed. It never saw the light of day by the time 2004 convention came around. January 30th, 2002, Vice President Wallace Shultz agrees to hear the case against Behnke. February 6th, Dr. George Hyder, he was the president of Concordia University, River Forest. There was a death. It was the death of Del Klostermeyer, who was the husband of Dr. Mary Todd, keep her name in mind. When he died, there was a funeral service on the campus of Concordia University, River Forest. Now, when we went through our problems of Seminex in the 70s, the congregation, which is on the campus, determined to not follow Missouri Senate, but wanted to leave with Seminex. But there was some financial and legal ramifications which they couldn't leave, otherwise they would lose their grounds. So what they did was, is they remained kind of an independent, never joining, but they were being served by ELCA pastors. One of them, who was a woman, at this funeral service, which had communion, the president, a River Forest president, who is a Missouri Senate pastor, communed at this funeral service from a ELCA woman pastor. Obviously, this began to raise some concerns. By June 25th, 2002, a date you might recognize as June 25th, Shultz concludes that Behnke is guilty of all charges. We didn't find out about this until a little later because Behnke appealed the charges, so it never became public. But by July 12th, Lutheran Hour Ministries had relieved Shultz of his duties for one reason or another. There were some there was a first model theological conference in Phoenix, you might remember, that I went to in August of 2002, in which the synodical president said, we're going to start having theology conferences to start talking about our differences, and he wanted to talk about unionism and syncretism. September 11th, the next year, 2002, there was another interfaith service, this time at Valparaiso, which is an independent Lutheran college, but was being served by a Missouri Senate pastor at their chapel and was involved. This also began to raise a stink, you might say. By September 18th, Lutheran Island Ministries officially terminate Dr. Shultz. In October, the CCM meeting, They gave one of their opinions. And once again, these opinions stand until a convention overrules them. Concerning the role of conscience in the dissent process, you already see the CCM being to deal with dissent. In January of 2003, our own Southern Illinois district, the five representatives to the Model Theological Conference in Phoenix now hold a district conference. That is where I delivered a paper, although I wasn't there. This is when Sadie was coming into this world, and so I left my paper, and one of the other pastors read it for me. Although I can say from that particular point, I was unelectable for some reason or another. February 19th, the Committee on Theology and Church Relations, the CTCR, issues a document on the theology and practice of the divine call in which laymen, including women, are allowed to be theology professors at synodical universities. And interesting enough, they also stated that Resolution 307A was not explicitly addressed by the issue of an LCMS pastor at a civic event, referring to Yankee Stadium. However, the dispute resolution panel did not respond to that until later. The CCM, February 20th, gives this opinion. The Constitution and bylaws of the Senate do not allow or contemplate the expulsion of a member of the Senate on the basis of an action taken with the full knowledge and approval of the appropriate ecclesiastical supervisor. This is the opinion which stated if you get your ecclesiastical supervisor's approval, you can't be charged. March 1st, Southern Illinois District and Convention, several overtures were brought forward calling to investigate on Professor Kishnick to overturn the CCM opinion. I could have included several others. I did include on the next place, the Wisconsin District Convention. There were about four or five conventions that asked that these things be addressed. None of those overtures were addressed at all. They all never got out of fourth grade of the Synodical Convention of 2004. Top of the second page, April 5th, Kishnick unveils his Ablaze program in which he takes congregations to teach other congregations. All of those that he picks are church growth contemporary worship congregations. In other words, he's simply doing a contemporary worship kind of thing. April 30th, the CTCR gives out a document called The Theology and Practice of the Divine Call. Once again, it begins to have minority statements. Now, there have been minority statements in the past, but it's unusual. Maybe one out of ten has something where someone says, now every statement comes out with a minority statement. And I would say I probably agree with almost all of the minority statements that have come out. May 1st, the Wyoming District Convention also addresses it. On May 12th, the Baker matter was officially closed. The appeal committee came back. The appeal committee said Schultz was correct according to the scriptures in what he said, but because the ecclesiastical supervisor, that is, Dr. Kishnick, gave his approval, therefore Banky could not be suspended or terminated from the Missouri Synod roster. While Schultz said there's no way, and I give a little statement there, but in effect, there's no way to get justice. And those who are in power are not following the rules anyway. And he said, I'm just not going to pursue it anymore. And so at that point, everything became public. Something else, May 29th, the case against the teaching of evolution by Dr. Matthew Becker at Concordia University, Portland, is officially closed. This has been brewing for some time as well, and I would say this issue, although they call it closed, he still continues to teach this. And this is one of those things in which I would say not all is well throughout the Synod, but this is one particular example of that. And I would say later in 2004, the reason that they changed the entire dispute resolution panel, it gave some reasons. One, because there were frivolous people being charged, and there were those who were district presidents, the synodical presidents were in charge, and those who were professors of universities or seminaries. He's one of those. May 30th, Kishnick urges the signers of a document that they may be one, TTMBO, that they are to be disciplined. Now, at every point as I go through, you're going to see what I'm going to call shots over the bow, which they say, you know, yeah, you can't do this or you ought to be disciplined. You can't do this or you ought to be disciplined. I would say, you know, the first two or three times that I brought this to the elders or some groups, everyone said, oh, do you think we're going to be disciplined? And after about the third one, they said, you know, I don't think anything's going to happen. And the truth is that, no, there is no discipline in the Missouri Synod. Even when someone says, hey, this ought to happen, and then Kieschnick, quote, in a letter, gives the approval and says to the district presidents, you ought to do this, it pretty well doesn't happen. But this is one example of a statement that was signed by a Northern Illinois Confessional Lutheran group responding to many things that were going on. I did not sign that document initially, but after I saw this Kieschnick's letter in which he said that they ought to be disciplined, I went ahead and signed it just out of unity with my brothers to state I believed in it, I just didn't think it was necessary, but if you're going to start going after them, well, I'm with them. And so I did. June 2003, Lutheran Witness contains an official notice that they're going to hire Dr. Mary Todd. You might remember I mentioned her name a little bit earlier. What's significant about this? Well, Dr. Mary Todd, in the year 2000, published a book in which she talked about how the Missouri Synod is biased against women, and that she doesn't quite go as far as to say there ought to be women's ordination. But what she says is that we need to study this issue, and it's not being studied, and she goes and has kind of a history of the Missouri Synod showing how this is the case. I don't agree with it, but she did. Everyone said to her, you believe in the ordination of women, that's what you're trying to do. No, I'm just saying we want to study it, she said. Keep that in mind. July 14th, the University of River Forest, Concordia, President Hyder resigns under intense pressure. Not only relating to what happened before, but especially to financial issues. September 26th, the Presidium concluded that the Valparaiso Interface Service was, in fact, unionistic and syncretistic. November 4th, Jesus First is a group that publishes a paper. They are a group, I would say, a conglomeration of pastors often who are charismatic, who are church growth, who are contemporary worship, who are evolution, who are liberal. They've all come together under a title, Jesus First. What is interesting is you go back, the past president before Dr. Barry, Ralph Bowman, he's on the list for Jesus First. If you go back and take a look at presidents of LWML in the past, they're all on the list. You can just kind of go back and see who now sides with Jesus First. They criticize the theology of Schultz and Croyce, in which they say that we're not to worship the Muslims because the Muslims don't worship God. And they say, well, maybe. And they cite natural knowledge of God. November 19th, the LCMS Board of Directors declare eight opinions of the CCM to be of no effect, including that ecclesiastical supervisor decision. On December, CCM reaffirms it. February 17th, the CTCR finally gives a review of the TTMBO, and guess what? There's a minority opinion. They're a little bit critical of it. Dr. Sam Masker, in the spring of 2004, now we have Concordia University Seward, who has a document being put out. He publishes a paper there talking about the LCMS on the lay performance of pastoral functions. What happens in the July 2004 convention? Lay ministers are now approved. We have that convention there. Kieschnick was re-elected with 53% of the vote. There were 88 new circuits formed. Not just new circuits, but new circuits in which they were allowed by exception. That is, they didn't meet the bylaw synodical requirement for new circuits, in which there needed to be at least 7 congregation and 1,500 confirmed members, amounting to exceptions to the rule, 14.2% of the vote of the voters now are really not meeting the bylaws, but were allowed to vote. Kieschnick being elected by 53% obviously lets you know what a great difference that is. There were some congregations that I would say already saw the writing on the wall in 2001, and by 2004, soon after the convention, Salem Lutheran Church in Malone, Texas, leaves the LCMS. The Star, let you know that's another one of your other sheets, if you want to take a look at that. It has Salem Lutheran Church in Malone, Texas. I talked with their pastor James Heiser, he is one who said, by the time I got back and told them what happened, he said, there was no stopping. He said, I couldn't stop my congregation. He said, in fact, I thought maybe I'd try to slow them down a little bit. Yeah, we would probably leave, but maybe not as quick. But he said he was done. He said, and they knew. July and August of 2004, here's an example of a congregation being served by a Missouri Synod pastor in which some of the political finaglings gets him removed from the Missouri Synod roster. They try to do some other things. He forms a mission congregation and is considered an associate pastor out of a congregation in Peoria, but that soon falls through, and later you'll see that they have gone independent. And they are not in the Missouri Synod. August 2004, there's a national youth gathering. In the middle of the sermon, President Kieschnick takes a break, lets his wife address the all of the youth right in the middle of the sermon, right in the middle of the worship service. August 31st of 2004, if you look at your other sheet, there is something called the Malone Statement, in which certain congregations got together and said, these are the things we agree on, and we agree that we will exchange communion with each other, but to the exclusion of others. Third page. I give an example of a declaration of a state of confession drawn up by a couple pastors. It sounds similar to ours, but it's interesting in which individuals are able to sign up from different congregations. If you were an individual, you could sign up, by their website. But what I find, and I've talked with these pastors, I'm a little bit uncomfortable because how would someone make that state of confession individually, and where would they commune, and what would happen, and if they were together with the congregation that did it. So, I mean, in talking with them, they're not really working it out exactly the way that it says on paper, but there have been, and this is just one example of others who have been doing a state of confession of some point. Much of what goes on, even within our circuit, within our district, is being fueled by, or at least prodded by, ourselves. In September 5th, the Greater Egypt Circuit Forum had a synodical convention review by Pastor Kettner, in which he told similar things to what I have been saying. In September 11th, there was a special Southern Illinois District Convention. It was intentionally set up well before the Missouri Synod Convention to deal with finances, with low finances. However, this is also a place in which what went on at Synod began to overflow, I guess you would say. And President Herb Miller, of our Southern Illinois District President, began an Augsburg confession study, saying that he wanted to deal with the disagreements within our district by means of this study. They also passed some overtures, one dealing with visitation. That visitation has yet to happen, but it was a visitation intending to deal with problems. It didn't. September 13th, Redeemer Lutheran Church in St. Clair Shores withdraws from the LCMS. This is one example of which I will say, and I don't want to say too much more about this, and when I'm dealing with specifics, I'll probably address those later if you have questions. This particular pastor, although I would agree with his evaluation of what's going on at the convention, I would not be in favor of joining with him in the future. There are some things that he teaches on certain issues that just aren't quite right. And so I would say I've also found in looking at, just because you have the same enemy doesn't mean you may not actually be friends.
You have the same friends either.
Yeah, exactly. So I give an example of that. October 2004, Brian and I attended the Chicago Free Conference. There was over 500 people in attendance. The idea, by the end of this conference, they published a one-page front and back called the Summary of Issues and Concerns. Their plan was to get together in a year, to come back with a call to repentance document that everybody could sign, and have papers drawn up dealing with each one of those issues. That should come up in October of 2005. Keep that in mind. October 24th, after that, was a Peoria ministerium. I attended this. A group of confessional pastors pledged to put together a confessional Lutheran ministerium by the next year, by October of the next year, in order to take care of faithful Lutheran pastors as their congregations would throw them out because they were trying to be faithful. November 2004, a Lutheran Witness article on confessional Lutheranism, in which Nasser responds to what went on up in Chicago in October and says, listen, we're all confessional. Well, that's what he said. We get to January 9th, 2005. This is when our congregation enters into a state of confession. There was a vote. There were, and I was looking for the figures as I walked down here. 23-4. There were four dissenting votes on that, 23-4. We entered into a state of confession. How has that been? I give some examples following that. But February 5th, dealing with Bishop Walter Obari, is from the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Kenya. I give you this because it's not only happening in our synod, it's not only happening in the United States. This bishop was originally the Lutheran Church in Sweden started a mission congregation in Kenya. Now, this bishop in Kenya, who is now independent from Sweden, comes back to Sweden, where they've all gone liberal, and someone there who doesn't want to be in fellowship with women Lutheran pastors, he comes back and ordains the guy as a bishop so that he wouldn't be in fellowship with the others, from which the Sweden Lutheran Church then says, Obara, that he's got to be kicked out. This is typical of what's going on, I would say, throughout world Lutheranism. February 10th. Here's an example from the Evangelical Lutheran Synod, another Lutheran Synod. There'll probably be discussion where people have asked me, what about some other synods? There was probably a time in which I would have looked to the ELS and said, here's a possibility. However, the President's Committee on Ministry put forward this document in which it taught a limited public use of the keys. I do not agree with this, but what they said was that you could have some people who could take a part of the pastoral office, a layman who could use it for a while or something like this. This was proposed, later we're going to see where it is approved. And so this is where I began to say, listen, I don't think this is an option. February 13th, the Greater Egypt Circuit Forum has a presentation by our elders. They asked us to come down to Jacob, dealing with the public confession of the faith, and that we did. Audio CDs were handed out concerning that. March 1st, Kieschnick gives a letter to pastors. He's concerned about the internal disagreements, but particularly about political things within the Senate and the Board of Directors authority. March 14th, I have in your document here, we're not the only ones. The Rock Island Circuit of the Central Illinois District unanimously passed some resolutions. The reason that I put some of these in here, and anything that I mention, if I don't give it to you, I can give it to you, but I wasn't going to copy everything. I wanted to show you that many of the issues that we're talking about are being addressed. Some, one or two here, one or two here. This is another example of that. March 30th, I was invited up to a Lutheran United meeting in Chicago. I gave a paper. That CD of my paper is also available. It's at this point that a group called Lutheran Concerns Association, the LCA, announced that they are planning a lawsuit dealing with the manipulation of delegates to the Synodical Convention back in 2004. I came back, I discussed this with the elders. This is something in which we decided that our congregation was not going to consider as signing on, nor would I sign on. It wasn't that we were particularly disagreed. The facts showed a problem. I give you some of that in here. But we said, we've got our own state of confession. This is the way we're going. If someone else wants to do that, let them do that. Top of page 4. The constitutional amendment comes back that was put out by the Synodical Convention, and it did not receive its two-thirds vote, in which they were trying to change the Board of Directors' authority. However, the Committee on Constitutional Matters ruled that it didn't matter. Simply because it was voted on, it was okay, and so they were going to follow that opinion anyway. My paper concerning from Lutherans United was published in Christian News in April of 2005, and from that particular point, I received lots of requests, and I would say we have put out probably 200 to 250 states of confession packets being given out somewhere in that neighborhood. Because of that, I was invited to speak at a couple different places, one unofficially in Minnesota. And also, there were some that asked about some other places. A little bit later, I was invited to speak with Iowa. I think that's coming up in a bit. April 2nd, Pastor Stefanski from the Arkansas congregation resigns from the LCMS. April 12th, the Rock Island Circuit has a resolution. Next one, April 15th, 2005, the CTCR issues a statement on in statu confessionis in response to questions from the proceedings of the Senate. They wouldn't even wait for the minority report to come out. They went ahead and published it, in fact, even published on the web. Later, you'll see I mentioned that. I go ahead and give you at least the two-page summary of it, not the entire thing, in which it deals with this protest on a state of confession. One of the things that I think is bottom of this first page dealing with the CTCR, it says here, it is also important to be consistent in dealing with those who stand on both sides of the line, the CTCR said. The approach taken in dealing with those who declare themselves in statu confessionis with the Senate and refuse to commune district or synodic officials should be the same approach taken in dealing with those who ignore or oppose the position on closed communion and thus choose to practice open communion in violation of their commitment to the Senate. An interesting statement. One, because it says that, quite clearly, that open communion is against what Senate teaches, although that's one of our points, because that's not being practiced. But if they're going to deal with us the same way that they do with open communion congregations, that means they're not going to do anything to us. April 24, 2005. Messiah Lutheran Church in Keller, Texas. Their pastor is Glenn Hubel. He spoke at this Lutheran conference that was up in Chicago. We've received several letters and correspondence. I've kind of kept those together. His congregation in particular, I would say he was probably the best speaker of the entire conference. He sent us a letter himself, personally, and his congregation, and all signed it concerning what was going on. April 2005, I'm going to skip over some of these, but there are consensus articles. Just like Jesus First has a paper that is published, another group of synod called Consensus has a paper in which they publish. This is made up of confessional Lutherans of various different groups in which they will publish different things dealing with synod. It's real interesting to take Jesus First and Consensus and put them side by side as they talk about the same issue and compare these two. April 2005, the reporter letter to the editor, Professor Belt, who was on the CTCR, responds concerning the order of creation that was not dealt with. And he said he was one of the five who signed the minority report, and this was not being dealt with, and so he wrote a letter to the editor of the reporter. In May of 2005, I began to put out four bulletin insert updates. They are pink sheets that are now included in our packet. In May of 2005, having seen my paper in Christian News, I was invited to come up and speak in Iowa, and that was set up for a Reformation presentation. Another consensus article. And the next reporter, May 2005, has a letter to the editor from Professor Weinrich, who also cites the order of creation as not being dealt with in reports to the ELCA dealing with their sexuality report. The Greater Egypt Circuit Forum in May 1st has a presentation on the Lutheran Confessions, a very fine presentation, and some of these things are being dealt with. May 24th, I include a minority opinion. Recently, David Rohde, who happens to be the son of one of our members, came to visit, and I had some conversations with him. As we move along, if there are any pastors that are related to members of our congregation, I send them a pastor's packet and copies of everything we have so that they might know what's going on. I would say he's a member of some Texas groups that are doing the same things that we are doing. In fact, many of them are using our state of confession documents and Bible studies and things of that sort, and have even put some of our stuff on the web for others to see. June 5th, 2005, this was our second elders' presentations on Secret 3 and 4 in Hamlet, Illinois, within our district. President Miller also spoke at that. We have the CDs that you can see what they did. This is the second, the last one of our trying to ask pastors if they would invite us to come and speak, and we can talk about the effectiveness of that and how that has worked. Well, simply to say, at that convention, at that circuit forum, it was two circuit forums. A circuit is made up of about 8 congregations. So you would say there were 16 congregations that could have been in attendance. There were 5 that were actually in attendance. Of those 5 that were in attendance, probably 4 of them were already sympathetic to our cause, whether they had actually seen it or whatever. One was not. What response did we get? A very good response from the 50 or so people that were there. And so in one sense, you would come away saying, hey, look at these. They like what we said, and they understand it. And people came up to us, thank you very much, and we agree with you. But I would say by the time you're driving home and saying, well, if you've got 4 congregations, of which 50 are, people there, and that's only 4 out of 16 congregations, and of those 4 that at least agreed with us, I can tell you right now, this being quite a bit later, how many of them have really done anything with that? Have any of them entered into a state of confession? Have any of them had any kind of meeting with others? And the answer is no. And so I'm not quite sure that we would say, there are some that hear our presentations, there are some that respond in a very good way, some would say, I didn't know this was going on, thank you very much. There are people that respond to me and say, send me a copy of your stuff. Then the next time, the next month, they send me a letter and they say, here's some money, use it for, some send me up to $100 and say, use this to produce more of your materials, and can you send me 10 more? I'm going to pass it on to my buddies. And so I send them out. But having said that, I think that we must come to the grips with, we are doing a lot of work. I am doing a lot of work. The elders are doing a lot of work. I hope that you as well take packets with you, and I know because I've heard those. But I would say, in the end, there are some that are listening. There are some that are quite mad at me, and that they look simply at the cover and look at the 4 or 5 things. There are some that say to me, in almost a sneering kind of way, when do you have time to be a pastor? How come you get to do this? But I would say, by and large, most people are in the middle. And not much is being done. But we'll discuss that towards the end. Keep going. June of 2005. I simply want to cite, this is a Golconda, Illinois pastor, Haroon. I've got his transfer letter on my desk. I was supposed to send that over a week ago. But anyway, obviously some things happened down in Golconda, in which Pastor Haroon made a presentation concerning things going on within our Senate. In fact, the title of his presentation was called Why Senate Will Not Return. I've got a copy of that up in my, it's a little bit thicker, but I would say it was an excellent presentation. If you'd like copies of that, let me know. June 9th, Lutheran Church Canada passes an overture shaking their finger at the Missouri Senate regarding unionism and syncretism because of what they've done. The ELS Senate in June of 2005 now approves that document, with which I don't agree. The CCM opinion of June 30th lets us know that laymen really have no rights within the Missouri Senate. They have no access to the dispute resolution process, and once again, we're simply at the will of the district presidents, whether they're going to approve. And if we come to them, it's got to be a member of Senate, a congregation, or a pastor. June 2005, the reporter letter to the editor. There's a response. Master, who is the executive director of the CTCR, now responds to Weinrich about these order of creation omissions. And so you begin to see, not in full page kind of articles, but you begin to see all of this kind of behind, and if you can read between the lines, you can see that this is upsetting professors who know what's going on. There is also an article from Professor Marquardt, and I quote here, in which he says, within our Senate is beginning to follow a new pattern in our Senate that puts human regulations ahead of God's word. And this is probably the clearest information in an official synodical publication. Yeah, you pretty well won't see it. July 21st of 2005, there's a group called the Niles Group, and I mistakenly forgot to include that in the packet of information. It's not in there. This is a group of five congregations, pastors' congregations, included, for example, Stefanski in Arkansas, Jim Heiser in Texas, and there was five pastors and two laymen at it, in which, and I talked with Jim Heiser about this group, and I find it very promising, in which they said, well, we're not ready to form a synod. He said, I think that there's going to be quite a few congregations over the next few years that leave the Missouri Synod. He said, we're just going to wait for you. And he said, we're not ready. We got together. We had they got about a one-page front and back of things that they agree upon, in which they said, we're in communion fellowship with each other, but we're just not ready to do anything official that is informing the Synod. July 2005, a case for dissent, pastor in Indiana, another example. On August 1st, Kieschnick, in his letter to pastors, writes concerning misconceptions concerning the Synod. He writes, the Synod expresses its collective understanding of the Scriptures and the Lutheran Confessions through its doctrinal resolutions and statements in convention. And then this purpose of the Synod, that is, this purpose of coming together, is defeated when individuals are permitted to teach in accordance with their private views. For then there can be no such thing as a synodical position, and a meaningful corporate confessional commitment is impossible. And so he begins to say, hey, listen, you can't disagree with Synod. August 2005, Lutheran Witness article on lay ministers. I'm beginning to wonder about even allowing our congregation to have Lutheran Witness subscriptions, seeing what's continuing to come out concerning some of those, or at least cautioning about it. In August 2005, the ELCA approves a statement on homosexuality, in which it really doesn't deal with the issues, but says it's large enough to deal with it on an individual basis. August 15, 2005, that lawsuit against the LCMS is filed. I did include all of the documentation dealing with that. You can take a look at that a little bit later. August 19th, the LCMS Board of Directors gives a strongly worded statement dealing with the LCMS National Youth Gathering and the false teaching and practices that went on at that. You will find that the LCMS Board of Directors is really one of the only groups that is still actively and hardly fighting against that, and even after 2004 still retained a majority of good men upon it, so you see some truth coming out of it. August 23rd to 25th, they recently had the second theological conference. It was titled, Who's in Charge? And not only is it the wrong question, but I find it interesting. And when I saw I was asked if this might be something I might want to go to as a second vice president. I declined, having gone to the first one. Not much good would come out of it. August 29th, the Board of Spiritual Care, that is the circuit counselors, began to consider some of our 6 points. I've been encouraging this at various points, but we finally started to pick it up. And I would say the discussion, in one sense, would mirror what I would say happened at St. Paul Hamill with the elders. The discussion that goes on when we bring it up, I tell them, you've got it, you know, here's the thing, you have to read it. I've had someone else respond to it, and then we open it up. What I find is that, by and large, of the 12 guys around the table, my guess is less than half have actually read it. And when it actually comes down to discussing it, what's interesting is most of the guys around the table will agree with the position that is taken. Now, does that mean that any of them are doing anything or even teaching their people about what's going on with that Synod? No. But, well, the discussion is kind of happening. And in one sense, I'm driving home thinking, wow, 8 out of 10 guys agreed with me. I'll talk about the next one in just a little bit. September 7th, 14th, 21st. I give you an example. There is one pastor in the Southern Illinois District who used our stuff to go through his congregation, the Bible study. Then, Pastor Kaseman at Christ Our Savior in Freeburg, he offered a set of Wednesday nights in which he invited not only his congregation, but neighboring congregations to come and to start dealing with this. Now, this is one of the few events that has been outside of a congregation. And I would say there's very few going on within the congregation, although within our circuit, there has been those like Pastor Weber, Pastor Arun, Pastor Kress, those who are actually following Bible studies or things of that sort. But this is one example of that. May 2005 census. Let's see. September 1st, 2005. Our Kishnik gives a blue ribbon task force to have a zero-based look at the way we work together. If you know anything about zero-based accounting or whatever, what it means is you go back to, you wipe the slate clean, you start over, and you say, now what are we going to do? Well, if you're trying to change things, this is a very good way to do it. September 9th, 2005, finally we get the minority report from a layman, Paul Noss, who is now attending the seminary. I included his entire report. You will notice that our state of confession is a reference there, as well as a link to where it can be found on the web. And even this entire minority report is available on the Senate's website, but interesting. As well, the first report came out, was sent to everybody. The minority report, which comes out months later, you may not know if it's there or not. Oh, yeah, it's on the website. You can find it. September 9th, I got a list of paper by Dr. Lawrence White from Texas. September 11th, our Greater Egypt Circuit Forum gets together. We present to them some overtures. They decide that they don't want to deal with it at that time, so they delay it till September 25th. In order that we might have a special meeting for it. That was in Murfreesboro. There, Pastor Kettner did a fine presentation on church membership, unionism, syncretism, global communion. Does it really matter? September 18th, our own Lutheran church passed our 9 overtures. We also passed an additional one dealing with responding to the state of confession. And we officially passed our CTCR dissent letter in order to complete step 2 of the 3-step dissent process. And you know what the numbers of that vote was?
They were all about 16 to 5, 20 to 5, 17 to 6.
Was the dissent one too? I thought that one was unanimous.
Oh, the dissent. I'm sorry.
Yeah, local congregation.
This is at Trinity, when we did our dissent last vote.
They were all
I think it was unanimous. Every one of these here was unanimous. Now, September 25th, when we go to the circuit forum, they did pass all 9 of those. At the bottom of the page, page 5, the Augustana Ministerium, I'll give you a 2-page in your other sheet dealing with this. They did exactly what they said. A year later, they were ready to go with a ministerium to support pastors. We have been using them as one of our mission money. Top of page 6, September 23rd, there is a published document called The Address You'll Never Hear. It is a presentation. It is a paper written intended to look like a district president acceptance speech, but the guy who's quote wrote it is called John Brands, who happened to live at the time of Martin Luther, and so it's really a spoof. But it's the address that you'll never hear in which this district president says, "I'm actually going to discipline. I'm actually going to hold up this," and it's very good reading. September 25th, now the Circuit Forum does pass those 9 overtures. There were a couple congregations that voted against some of these, but by and large, those that were in attendance voted for it. September 2005, an examination of the concept of lay ministry, reference to Pastor David Rohde. September of 2005, you'll see on your sheet that a group called Renewal in Missouri that used to be called RIM, then began to channel themselves Jesus Alive Today. I told you about them at the beginning. 18 years later, they decide to fold it up. In this article, they say, well, we're going to disband. We're all getting old. And if you want to send any money, you ought to send it on to Jesus first. Get the connection. Now, that's what they say. Do you know why Jesus first disbanded? I don't think it has everything to do with them being old. I think it's because they are now mainstream. 18 years later, they no longer need to renew Missouri. Because guess what? With contemporary worship, we're already charismatic Pentecostal. What else do they need to do? So, give yourself to Jesus first. He'll propose to Kishnik, and we'll just keep going. October 2nd, the Coin Voters Assembly considers an overture to make sure that guys like myself aren't elected who are in a state of confession, saying that that's illegal. October 3rd, we get a response from the CGCR saying they got our dissent letter and they're going to deal with it. How much longer do we got on there, Dan? You know, I know I'm getting close, but I think I can get it done. September,
12 minutes.
What?
12 minutes.
Excellent. October 11th, there's a response from the ELDS Presidium, one of the groups, Rolf Preuss, who left the Missouri back before 2000, I'm pretty sure, went into the ELS, is now very upset about them passing that document before. His circuit number 8 wrote a response saying that they shouldn't pass it. Well, now that it passed, the difference between the Missouri and the ELS is in the ELS there's actually discipline. And so because Rolf Preuss said, no, this was wrong, they're now dealing with it. Which is at least the way a Senate ought to work if you're going to have a Senate that walks together. October 19th, another example of a resolution of dissent from an Indiana District Pastors Conference. And I just found out, October 2005, a group called Daystar, which is even more radical than Jesus First, which includes not only Missouri Senate liberal pastors, but ELCA and anyone else, which is actively in support of women's ordination, publishes an article by Dr. Mary Todd, who has moved from Concordia River Forest to an Ohio college, and she has decided to leave the Missouri Senate because she believes the ordination of women to the pastoral office. Finally, is honest and comes forward with it. October 2005, consensus articles. October 2005, there has been no Chicago Free Conference. As was said, there's no document of repentance that was signed, no papers put together. Why is this? Because I think that there were too many people that had Senate in their pockets that were synodical professors or who were on the staff of district and being paid out of the district's money, that if they made a dissent, and now that Senate has shot several, CGCI and CCM has shot over the bow and warned them, don't do this, you'll get in trouble, everyone stepped back, and all of a sudden, nothing has happened. And so, it didn't occur. October 16th, we hosted our OWML rally. We put up our display of our presentation. And October 16th to the 18th, the last CCM meeting begins to deal with dissent. And this is one in which they're getting real persnickety about this. You're going to have to go to the back pages, I'm sorry, of your sheet. That one's not in order. In which it talks about who you can dissent to. It talks about the propriety of these small groups who are getting together. On page 48, the last, second to last page, it deals with a group in Texas, and it cites them in which they're getting together to dissent, and says that this is not to be allowed and that district presidents need to deal with them. I don't think it will happen, but it's interesting. October 21st, about a week ahead of this, before I was going up to Iowa, I sent copies of our state of confession up to the host pastor, to the district president, to the guys that invited me, and I said, I wanted you to know what was coming on. They told me a whole lot, and I said, I just wanted to be clear and upfront with you. Before I could turn around, the district president had called the group that invited me and told them to disinvite me and that I was not to come up there to speak. They followed his advice, though they disagreed with his advice. Although I have tried to call the district president 3 times, I've not gotten any response, nor have I gotten him to call me back, and I finally just gave up on it. I asked the man who was hosting this, tell me what did he give any reasons for this, for not inviting me? He said, yes, the host congregation had some problems some years back, and maybe, we didn't want you to cause any trouble. And the second thing is that this district president of Iowa District East talked with another district president who happens to be in Montana, and he talked with him, and he said, this guy from Montana said that if a congregation or someone dissents from what Senate officially teaches, they're saying that Senate is heterodox. That is, that's true teaching or false teaching. To which I said, and this guy said, well, yeah, that's what he's saying. The reason I bring that up to you is, I have been telling you all along, the 35 district presidents, there are probably 5 that are considered District East and Montana are three of those. I have now told you about the actions of those three. Are there any that will stand up? I don't think so. And finally, November 7th, I had a discussion with the circuit counselors concerning contemporary worship. We had a real good discussion. Most of the men around the table, probably 10 out of 12, completely agreed. It was a very good discussion once we got past just grandstanding. And finally, I said, listen, if you haven't read this paper, don't respond to it and all. But I thought it was interesting. At the very end, one man who happens to be one of the most contemporary worship guys within our district, probably one of two or three that are just really into it, when he gets to the end, he says, well, I agree with everything that you say, and I hope that, you know, that I don't know of anybody that's doing any of the things that you say. You know, he's the same one who 2 weeks earlier participated at our district, our district pastoral conference, in which there was a full-blown contemporary worship. He was up front, along with the guy with the electric guitar, screaming in the microphones. There's a lot that's going on, but that takes us to there. Why don't we take a break? Change the tape. On page 6 of your outline, dealing with the future. Some things that we have coming up, the future. November 20th, next Sunday, we need to have a voters' assembly to vote our break a tie for circuit counselor. There's a CTCR meeting. This would be the first one after our letter, which we could have some response following that, although the CTCR moves rather slowly, except when they want to. So we'll have to see if that brings anything. We do have quite a few things listed here dealing with the Southern Illinois District Convention. What is coming up? Well, we've got our district convention coming up in February of 2006. Our overtures, which we passed and which the Circuit Forum passed in December of 2005, will be coming out in the convention workbook. They'll all be published. On January 29th of 2006, there will be four committees. These four committees get together, take a look at all these overtures, and then they, if there's any errors, they really have the authority to completely rewrite them or throw them out and not vote to bring them to the convention. I think you're going to find that many of our overtures are going to be significantly changed. Normally, they water them down. If an overture says, let's require so-and-so, then they come back and they say, well, let's recommend. Although I have to admit that I'm becoming a little more at least positive that maybe some of these things will be passed, even through the floor committee, though maybe watered down, but passed at district convention. Why is this? Well, for the very same reason that I talked about our circuit counselors within, there are many that would say, well, yeah, we support that. And they might even vote for it, as did our circuit. But when it actually comes to standing up and saying, but we will separate from those who do err, or we will denounce what's wrong, that's not the case. And so I think we might even see some of these pass, but we'll see how it goes. February 6th, if I'm not reelected, and I think that's a pretty good bet, the last discussion I will have is of closed and open communion. The Southern Illinois District Convention at the bottom of the page. Page 7. You begin to see from this point on nominations towards the LCMS convention in July of 2007. There are a lot of things along the way in which, once again, you will submit overtures to go to the convention. They'll be printed up in the workbook. March of 2007. Four committees normally meet in May or June of 2007, and then the LCMS convention in 2007 at Houston, Texas. Having said that, that kind of walks through the outline. I did put just a miscellaneous list on the back, some things I want to take a look at. There's a group in Springfield called the Association of Evangelical Lutheran Lay People. They have invited me to come up and speak for them, and I think I included that on my list as well. Yeah, May 6th of 2006. This is an example of one of their documents. I'm going to be writing a couple articles for them. On the Reformation Today website, There is a wealth of information. I include the front and back page, in which I circle up here to the side. You can get a link to Instatu Confessionis. You go to the back then, and you find that this is Trinity's state of confession that is included at the bottom, the short form that we have. The next page deals with the confessional rooms in Texas. And as I said, there are a number of those down there. Some flowing over to New Mexico and all, but are doing quite a bit, and they're having meetings and gatherings of more than just one congregation. And so I'll give you a little bit of information concerning those. The next, back of that next page, on their website, it talks about a simple and clear state of confession document. That's Trinity's state of confession document, and so that is also on their website. Coming up now on the way to the district convention, there is a place called LutheranInfo.net. This is a confessional group that is setting up some email lists that can be with each district as district conventions come about. Now, ours come about in February. Some of the others all happen pretty well, June and July, some in August. But they will all be coming up from 2006. And so just like local elections tell us about national elections, you will find that district, the way districts go, may tell you as well how things will go at Senate in July of 2007. Consensus is another group. This is the group that's sponsored, as you'll see off here to the side, the last October meeting up in Chicago, of which there was not a second October meeting. I'm waiting to see if that's going to happen. And then we get to the CCM minutes. Having said all that, my summary statement is this. We have been doing a lot since our state of confession. I've been doing a lot. We've been getting out lots of packets. As I mentioned before, we have some people who disagree. They have contemporary worship full going. They want to continue. I have some who are very thankful, and when I go to some of these confessional groups in which I say, thank you very much for that material, I have something to use. Even a pastor who disagreed, there were some others that were saying, oh, well, we shouldn't have gone into a state of confession, and this one pastor said, he said, you know, if Henson had waited, and his congregation had waited to go into a state of confession when we were all ready, he said, they wouldn't even be in a state of confession now. He said that they did it gave us a road and let us see what they did. And I would say, you know, with the Chicago group having not come out with anything in October, we're ones that did go forward and did put something out, and many people have used that. Many people are dealing with our same issues. I'm not saying ours is the best written or whatever, but it is one of those, and it is. Having said that, I would say, what are we looking at? Right now, what we said was, we're going to go into a state of confession. We're going to follow the dissent process. We've been to the one, which is talk to your peers. We have gone to the second step, which is tell the CTCR you're in dissent. The third step of the process is to send overtures to the synodical convention. Now, the district is one which we're trying to do some things to talk, but it's really the synodical convention that counts. That is coming up. That's the third step in the dissent process. Having looked at all that we have done, having seen the response, and I'm sure some of the elders as well can tell about the responses that they have had, not only with congregations but individuals, I would say that our response at some points is good, but it's not nearly enough. If you think that our state of confession is somehow turning the entire vote of the Missouri Senate, you better think again. If you think that we are having really any real effect in that way of substantial, it's not happening. And I would say, it looks, the way things are, it looks that come 2007, the convention either will not deal with any of these concerns and simply have a big rally and, yay, here we're doing well, or they will actually take two or three steps further against what we have said as falsehood, continuing the progress. And I would say, come 2007, if that's the way Senate goes, and it's rather clear, then we would, according to our state of confession, you've given up on the dissent process, you've finished three out of three steps, it's time to leave and to say, no, this is not our Senate. It has changed. That is the way that I see things go. This is the way things are let out. Having said that, I will tell you that there are times since the State of Confession in which the work, the stuff that is being gone, gets very tiring, that it gets very, I'm very pessimistic, almost depression kind of thing, where I kind of want to give up. The thing that keeps me going with it is not that Missouri Synod is changing somehow, which is going to come back to the truth, although the Lord wants to, I guess he couldn't do that. But I would say it is the few laymen along the way and people who, when they get the materials, say, I didn't know anything about this. And having said that, you say, well, how can people not know? 6 months after our State of Confession, I had one of the members of our congregation in my office, in which this person said to me, I'm not quite sure, what is the State of Confession thing? I know there's something going on about this, but I don't really know what it is. Interesting. You could have been a member of our congregation for all of that time and still not have a clue what it was or what it meant. That's pretty well with the way the Missouri Synod is right now. So this is where we are, kind of where we have outlined that we are going, and to kind of give you an update of how it is going. I'm done. Comments? Questions?
I always have a comment. If the organization does not have an active discipline process, there's little reason to be surprised that this person will do what he wants, this person will do what he wants, everybody just kind of agrees. We're not too far from the Baptist, as you explained it, that we would then get up before we go to a Missouri Synod Church and the pastor would be up and say, now this is what I believe and this is what I quote teach. And they'd say, oh, okay. But otherwise than that, if there's no discernible discipline process, how can you affect change?
Absolutely correct. Yes?
It speaks volumes to me that out of the entire board and presidium, all the district presidents, that none of them are standing up and working at this or fighting to keep the Synod orthodox. I mean, if at the highest levels of leadership you're not having some people work on this or try to make a change, it really is disheartening.
Yes, but that's the way it's... I just report the facts. I don't... Absolutely.
Seems to speak volumes of the state of the Synod right there.
Yes?
Because they're afraid to rock the boat, or just...
One of the problems is that as a district president, I don't think there may be one, but I don't think there are any left that are pastors of a congregation. In other words, they had to leave their congregation and they were a full-time district president. Now, if a district president who is on the being paid by Senate as well as is Senate's officer, if they dissent and say no, they can be removed. Now, as a pastor, if I dissent, they can't remove me from the congregation. They can remove me from the Missouri Senate and say you're not Missouri. But there's a sense in which there is a real job security kind of thing. And this is one where they know that they can't actually do this. Now, you would say, well, there's not any discipline, so why wouldn't they? Well, I don't know. But I think that plays into it as well. There are those who don't want to speak up because they have the authority and think that they can affect change where they are and by what they're doing, and they're trying to work within the system. What I've come to realize after 2004, and I would say the lawsuit is one example in which I would say, I'm afraid to say that you can't get justice within the system. I tried it. And I'm convinced, even though I'm following the dissent process, that's the other thing that I just don't think they realize yet, that it's not going to, you can pass all the overtures you want, but they don't get out of floor committee. Well, you can scream all you want, but if the official publications aren't getting the info out, nobody knows. And so there's this kind of, it's just not happening.
And the majority of the congregations, the pastors are not talking about this. The people show up, go to church Sunday, go home, you know what's happening. That's the majority of laymen in just said they don't have any idea this stuff's going on.
Cool. Anyone else? Yes.
Well, I've said in our meetings, I think it's just pointed out that it's the possibility of Senate turning around is very poor. And you know, I look at it personally, the information we're getting out to other congregations, at this point we're saving souls. I think it's that the law is tough, I think we can turn Senate around on the large that by getting the truth out to the individual congregation members, or lay people. I think the evidence is here that the folks that have come to our congregation in the last 6 months is testament to that. Those that are that hear the truth respond to it. We can say something. For
thank you. What else? Any questions about things that we have planned for the future, where we're going? Any questions about, and did I give you too much information, too little information? Did I kind of weave the web so that you could at least see the points together? If there's any of the documents or any things like that, you'd say, I'd like to see some more of that. I have no problem getting that to you.
I think we have plenty of past history, and if it's kind of everybody's feeling that, you know, we're committed to district or synodical convention in 2007, but if it's odds on favorite that things aren't going to change, should we possibly take some of your time and some of the elders' time instead of continuing to work on the back side of it, to work on the front side of it and say, okay, if it continues till 2007 like we think it's going to, then what are we going to do? I think if it's all pointing that direction, which it appears to me in everybody else's comments, that possibly the next year and a half, not totally, but at least a portion of time and meetings should be developed on what if she doesn't turn around and what are we going to do in 2007?
I didn't present that, it just seemed too unwieldy, but I would say following our sheet, if that is what happens, on there it talks about leading the Senate, it says you got two options. You help form a new Senate or you join an existing Senate. I'm not convinced as I walked through and I kind of at least showed you, there are other Senates, but I don't see any that I'm just ready to go to. I'm just not able to. Former existing Senate, there are some groups, and I'm beginning to get a feel of who to associate with and who not to, and how to do this. I would like to continue to be involved in, like, the ministerium in some of these groups, in which I can still speak about our state of confession and that. But I would like to also start to be involved in some of the Niles group. They met recently in Michigan. They probably maybe a little bit closer. Maybe they'll have one in Arkansas or something like that. I would like to try to get some more contacts and associations with Texas, although that's going to involve a little more travel and things of that sort. But I would say those are like-minded men that I would say are leading their congregations in very good ways. So, yeah, we need to start looking at possibilities. Anything else? Information-wise, was that helpful? Was it too disjointed? I mean, I don't know how. I mean, I could have grouped it, you know, here's all the CCM, here's all the... But I thought, you know, if I can go through it in a timeline, you can kind of see the big picture of it and how it all kind of weaves together and see how different groups are involved. Okay. Up to this point, I would say, after our state of confession, we did have one regular attender who left our congregation because of the state of confession. There have been some who have come to talk to me concerning it. There were two families that left our congregation. However, both of those families had some other issues Though they talk with me about state of confession as well, I would say there was other things that led them to leave. So I would say primarily we've only had and one person who wasn't a member, though a regular attender, who left. I would say there are still those within the congregation that are concerned about some of these things, that don't agree with it. Well, they're not speaking up, or maybe they don't know what's going on. I would like to continue to teach as we have time. I don't want it to become a soapbox in which it's always something we're talking about. And what I would liken it to, there was a synod in America, a Lutheran synod, that formed, and they were called the Anti-Missouri Brotherhood. Well, that was the name of their synod, the Anti-Missouri Brotherhood. I bring that up because you don't want to determine who you are by who you're not. You don't want to say, well, our sole reason for existence is to say we're not that. There comes a point in which you need to teach not only that which is wrong, point it out, but you need to teach this is what is true. And so I've attempted to, especially lately, to make sure that we're dealing with, as our Bible studies, dealing with baptism, and we're dealing with things that are just good, solid teaching. Now, I can say that there are still those who have said, you know, Pastor, you're talking about this synodical problems too much. And I went through and I said, you know, I don't, Bible studies haven't been doing it. Wednesday nights? We don't do it then. I go in the sermon, I said, I'll go back and look at my sermons. I said, and I had mentioned it from time to time, but I said, probably one out of four sermons or something like that. And, you know, so if you get the whole picture, it's not being, quote, done to a great degree. Although I recognize the need that we still need to teach people and address that. And I don't know exactly how to do that.
The only place you sit in the prayer is with the church, but they get it there. So if that's the only thing you're paying attention to, well, yes, you're doing it every Sunday. You should pray for your church every Sunday anyway.
So, all right. Last call. Do you think, and one of the reasons why I brought that up was to say, do you need a meeting like this? Now, again, this wasn't a teaching meeting. It was more of a, here's the events, here's what's going on, here's direction. Do you need meetings like this? And I apologize, it's been quite a long time since January, since we've had a meeting like this, but I wanted to give it some time. If you have suggestions, whether now or even later, of a way in which I continue to do that, whether it's bulletin inserts and things like that, so let me know.
I think the way you had this presented is fantastic. It was easy to kind of go back and forth.
And now we can take it home and, you know, circle the things, and if you want me, let me know. I'll get you some documents too if you need more. All right. Thank you very much.